Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hazio, Doug, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan, our buddy Marcellus Wiley later in the hour, and a pretty wild weekend in the NFL and a big Monday nighter tonight, Seattle Washington football team. That's the game we're talking about. That's the game we'll be betting on a little bit later on. And our buddy Craig Button will join us here in studio. And it's a wild time in the NHL, man. It's a wild time in sports. We just spent a lot of time on baseball and all the big money being splashed around and where the Jays stand on that. And the NBA's cooking and the NFL, the CFL, they're into the finals this weekend with the Argos at home against Hamilton this weekend down at BMO Field. That'll be a fun game. And
Jerry Stafford out in L.A.
Ooh, Sean McVay has got to be freaking. I watched basically every snap. He looked brutal. He looked awful yesterday. Stafford, he could have been legit picked four
himself,
times.
I moved Jerry Goff for Jerry Stafford.
Yeah, exactly. Matthew Goff is Jerry Stafford, and it's just the same person. One's in Detroit, one's in L.A. And McVay and the Rams have got to be freaking out a little bit. So we'll get to that a little bit later on. But the Leafs are red hot. We talked a lot about that, as we will in a moment here with Craig. They've won 14 of 16, including franchise record 7 in a row on the road. But while that's going on, their arch nemesis, their two biggest rivals, including their longest standing rival, is in shambles. You know, like, it really is amazing what's going on in the country right now, where Calgary, Edmonton, and Toronto are loving life. Loving life. Winnipeg is in a weird spot. They're losing some games. They won in Calgary on Saturday. They needed that one. But there's the top end of the country. And the bottom three, this might be, through 20 games, the worst three-pack of Canadian teams in terms of the three of them being included in the bottom of the standings. If it wasn't for Arizona, they'd be the three worst teams in the league based on points percentage.
Since we've been talking about hockey together, the three of us, this is the worst we've seen, like a three-pack.
Like a three-pack. There have been individual
three different reasons, too. You know what I mean? Three different, like, layers of it. You know,
right.
Like,
Ottawa, Vancouver, Montreal. Right. That's not Montreal to suggest they're the worst teams. Like, there have been years where the Leafs were horrendous and Ottawa's bad, or this or that or the other, but all three of them are a mess. And Montreal decided, for whatever reason, maybe it was because of the report that came out that Mellenby had stepped, well, it wasn't a report, he resigned and it went public.
Right.
All of a sudden, Bergevin, you knew, was done. And it was just a matter of time. And Mark Bergevin's out. The front office effectively is out. Jeff Gorton comes in as the senior VP of hockey operations, effectively the architect. And
that's
yet they still have to,
too,
well,
they
know
have
what?
To hire a GM who's bilingual.
That's the thing. Like, they're trying to think outside the box. Like, good on them. If they believe Jeff Gorton is the best person to steer the ship, who cares what language he speaks? You've got to have a winning organization and winning culture. But out of respect for the culture and everything that goes on in Montreal, you're going to have somebody that is really going to be the GM on paper and the figurehead who speaks the language, because Jeff Gorton is going to build it all, but he's going to have somebody to, I guess, effectively translate it in both languages for everybody.
That's
Does that sound right?
I think that's how it's being reported. Like,
right.
The GM is the de facto assistant GM, but will be bilingual, which I do think is very important. I know a lot of people in English-speaking Canada roll their eyes at this, and I get the impression, like, Habs fans kind of think, whatever, just get the right guy for the job. But I understand the cultural significance, the historical significance. I think you need someone who can relay the information in both languages. Mm-hmm. But we got a guy at studio who's very familiar with the city.
Yeah.
He was raised in Montreal. Believe he graduated high school in Montreal, University of Montreal. Unbelievable connection to Montreal. One of our favorites, our good buddy in studio. We're all at home, and Craig Button's in studio. And there he is.
Yeah, Keith asked me to come into the studio. I thought I'd see all you guys.
I know.
No,
well, now you are over the screen.
Here. I just get to look at you on the screen. Although this high-definition stuff, you look guys look good. I got to make a quick comment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My Patriots. I'm just telling you, my Patriots.
You're feeling
Shower. Oh, yes, Jeff.
Now O's back on that train? No way.
No,
stop
it. Oh, yeah, he's on the train. He knows. He knows what train to jump on. Like, it's a high-speed one. Sean McVay has never been the same since Belichick embarrassed him in the Super Bowl.
Well, I think
he can keep trying.
Right.
He can keep trying quarterbacks anyway.
I think you're either going to say you're Wolverines.
Oh, wow. That was a biggie.
What a weekend.
I had already bought the bottle of wine for Tessa after the Michigan State debacle when Ohio State hammered. I took a picture of it. I said it's bought and paid for. I didn't think we had a chance.
Well, they had that Spartans game, man. They should be undefeated. Like, I don't think they'd catch Georgia. as the number one seed in the country, but they could have. And now you beat Ohio State. They're, you know, they got another game this weekend. But Michigan's in, they're going to the playoffs, as they should. They've had a great season.
Go Blue.
But anyway, Montreal, can you speak to the significance and what this means? Jeff Gorton coming in as the senior VP of hockey operations, effectively the architect of the future team as of today, but the importance of having a bilingual GM. Does that make sense to you, Craig? You're very familiar with the city of Montreal. Do you think that's going to go over well? What do you think the reaction will be?
Well, two things I'd like to say. Like, could we potentially look at Jeff Gorton as the president of hockey operations? Could we not look at him as the Brendan Shanahan of the Montreal Canadiens? Yeah. How often does Brendan Shanahan speak? You know, Brendan Shanahan is the overarching figure, head president, and, you know, he guides things behind the scenes. And Kyle Dubas is the general manager. That's what I see Jeff ultimately doing once he hires somebody to come in there. I think the beauty of having Jeff, number one, you need somebody that can manage things today and going forward to whenever that time is when they name a GM. Number two, he's well versed in the league. He knows everybody. He knows the players. He knows the teams. He knows his compatriots, and then he also knows who could be good candidates for this job. So that's the way I look at it with Jeff, and that's how I'm seeing it. With respect to the language, 90% or a little bit higher of the Montreal Canadiens fans are French speaking. You need, it's a religion in Montreal.
Right.
You know, it is. And the French-speaking fans want to hear about their team and their language. It's critically important. It's critically important that you have people that can speak to your fan base, your customers, so to speak, in their language. So, we all talk about, you know, and we do. Oh, yeah, why do they need this? Why can't they just have an English-speaking? Because your fan base is French-speaking. And who's going to communicate with them? So that's the way I look at it. And I think it's critically important to have a French-speaking coach and a French-speaking manager that's going to lead. Now, Jeff Gorton, they haven't had a president of hockey operations in Montreal for a long time. I see Jeff as the first step to manage it, steady the ship, and then hire somebody to come on. And if you're going to hire somebody that hasn't been a manager, like, I mean, there's names out there. I mean, Matthew Darche, Mark Madden Jr., right, that have been in management positions. It would be nice to have somebody like Jeff Gorton to guide you along.
Right.
So, Craig, when the owner comes out and says, I think we need to freshen things up, is that a message to Gorton saying, you go ahead and blow this thing up and blow everybody out of here that you want to because we need just a whole, like, what does that mean? Like, is Carey Price in play? Like, what does that mean? That basically means to me that he wants to blow it up and completely start over again.
Yeah, you know what's interesting to me, Jeff, is it's a very different message than at the end of the Stanley Cup playoffs last July, right?
Like,
I mean,
yeah.
Short period of time. I mean, do the Montreal Canadiens have work to do? Yeah, they have some work to do. I mean, I don't know if he wants to blow it up or tear it down. I don't know what he wants to do. But what I would say is I think that a new general manager, the executive vice president of hockey operations, you know, what you want to be able to do is give them the authority to put people in place. I that's the message that I read from Jeff Molson in that statement. And I think that it's an important message because when you're making a change, you're also moving in a direction that you didn't believe in with Mark at this point in time. That's why you made the change. Jeff Molson had one of two things to do. Get behind Mark Bergevin and make the change. And when he decided to make the change, it means we're going away from that direction. So is that big? Is it small? Is it somewhere in between? We know that they have work to do. And to your question about Carey Price, you know, the biggest challenge with Carey is his $10.5 million a year cap hit. And in a league where the cap hasn't gone up. So I think there'd be teams interested in Carey Price, but that's a tight squeeze.
Oh, big time. That's a big contract with a guy in his mid-30s. And
you're not sure. Sorry to interrupt, Brian. And you're not even sure where Carey's at. Yeah. I mean, physically and mentally, right?
Right.
This is real life stuff that Carey's gone through. This isn't, you know, he's had the knee injury. He's got the hip going on. Like, he's got the physical stuff. But he's had real life problems here that he's
I'm not so focused on Carey Price noodles. I just mean if you're going to blow it up, it means kind of changing the face of the team.
But Bergevin snuck in a lot of deals under the wire, man. Like, he just gave Gallagher. He just gave Suzuki. He's coming off a year removed where Toffoli got a long-term deal. Josh Anderson got acquired and got a long-term deal. You know, like, they're –
I think they got a lot of good pieces.
They got good pieces.
They just got to figure it out.
They do have to figure it out. I mean, there's some, let's be honest. There's somewhere that cup run is it happened. They deserve credit for it, but it was an illusion. Like, they got hot at the right time. They took off. Good for them. Right now, they're currently in. They're having the worst start in franchise history. So they're somewhere in between. They're not a world beater. They're not a cup contender. I don't think they're the worst team in the league when everything's healthy. So I don't think Gorton's coming in with, like, the worst possible setup here, but he is committed to some tickets, right? Like, you're it's not like he's got a ton of flexibility. People are citing what he did in New York. He didn't, to my knowledge, outside of waiting for Lundqvist to run out, what else did he have to do in terms of getting rid of old, beaten-up contracts in New York? Well, like, he could settle down a little bit and wait for it to kind of breathe and sign Panarin, bring in Zibanejad, sign him, get those top two picks, bring them in. So how can you compare and contrast what he did in New York to maybe applying that in Montreal, Craig?
Well, back to Jeff's point, too, and I wasn't just saying about Carey Price. I mean, to Brian's point, you got Josh Anderson, you got Brendan Gallagher. You know, you have long-term contracts in there. I mean, Suzuki's a young guy. I mean, that's a good contract. But let's rewind and let's look at what happened in New York under Jeff Gorton's watch. Remember the letter, and I believe it was March of 2018?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We are going in another direction. So they let players go. They moved because they came to a conclusion in New York with the Rangers that they were not going to be able to compete with the big dogs in the East. And that was Tampa Bay. That was Washington. That was Pittsburgh. And so, I guess there's a difference between rebuild and reset. And I think what they were doing in New York was resetting. And I think that that's what they need to do in Montreal. There's a reset in the management office, and now there needs to be a reset with the formation of the playing roster. And I agree with Jamie. I think there's some good pieces there. I do. I don't think it's a team that is devoid of talent, is devoid of some really good players. But there's some gaps, and there's some significant gaps that Jeff Gorton and the management group that's going to come in there have to address.
Yeah, and the one thing I don't know how you feel about it too. Like, Gorton left the Rangers on a weird that was a weird situation too.
Really weird. I mean, sandbagged almost.
Well, you're right. I mean, I don't know. I'm not privy to what happened behind the scenes, but there was a disconnect of what went on. That and you talk. I thought, Brian, you were talking about the letter. I wasn't talking about the reset letter. I'm talking about the press release they had.
Right.
And
the
then
Tom
the next
Wilson
day,
Panarin
the
thing.
The Tom Wilson and that organization has pivoted on the fly after Gorton and Davidson have left the organization. So a lot of different things going on. The one thing I'll say, Craig, I don't know if you know Jeff Gorton that well, but he seems to be a guy that. He gets his mindset on things, and he's all in. Like, he went in on Panarin. He hasn't been shy to make a move and stand by it. And I think that's in that market, you do need confidence, and you do need to have a plan and stick to it. Because, like we know in this market in Vancouver and Edmonton and Calgary, like, it can get noisy, and it can get noisy really quickly. So I think Gorton has to be a very strong individual. And stick to his vision. I think they're ready for that, though, in Montreal.
Like, I agree. I think they've looked at this team outside of that cup run last year. A lot of people in Montreal are like, I don't see where Bergevin's going here. You know, like, where are we going? What are we building towards here? I'll bet you this will be received positively in Montreal. And that's what I gather based on what I've read and seen today.
I think it should be received well. And you know, you think about it, like in 2020, when the return to play came, I mean, that was a team that was 24th, and then they got in. They got in by the hair on their chinny chin chins, mm-hmm. And then they beat Pittsburgh, and they played pretty well against the Philadelphia Flyers before losing. And there was a lot of people in Montreal go, why are you doing this? We might have a shot at the lottery and get Lafreniere. So, to your point, Brian, there was a lot of hand-wringing about the direction that the Canadians were going in, and that's only a short. We're only looking now at a short 16 months ago when the fans weren't happy. What I know Jeff, and I know Jeff pretty good. keep in mind, he worked in Boston, pretty demanding market. Worked with the New York Rangers, pretty demanding market. Now he's going to Montreal. He steeled to go into this market. And, you know, three original six markets with a passionate fan base and, you know, high expectations. I think he's more than capable of going in and handling the challenges and the pressures of the market in Montreal. And I think that his record in New York, his record of being a really mindful, thoughtful, thorough manager will serve the Montreal Canadiens really well, not just in the short term as he's navigating and you know, keeping things at bay. You need somebody to steady the ship and steer the ship right now. But going forward, I think Jeff has an opportunity to do really good, positive things. And, you know, to Jeff Molson's term, you know, get not only have a fresh start, but get them into a direction where they can become perennial contenders.
What do you make of Toronto's ship right now, Craig? Didn't start off so hot, but they're on quite a heater. And just, we were talking at the top of the show, since we've been covering the Leafs and doing this show, it's probably the most positive stretch they've had.
Well, what I would say is, you know, it's amazing to me. They had that game on the Monday night against the Rangers where they were dominant. They were great that night. There was only because of Shesterkin that Toronto didn't win. Then they had a real kind of subpar game against San Jose on the Friday night, and then we know about the game in Pittsburgh that was terrible. The game against Carolina, they played well, and Carolina was a good team. But all of a sudden, over a span of really what I would call a subpar game and a real poor game, it was ready, blow it up. Like, I don't know. I mean, you got four really good offensive players. You got a defense. You got defense that's pretty good. I know Hall and Muzzin were struggling early on. Jack Campbell's played good. They made some changes. I mean, we all know that, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs, it becomes a proving grounds beginning on May 2nd. But I believe that this team is a good team. And the term I've continued to use from the start of the season is, for the Toronto Maple Leafs, it's about the beginning, the middle, and the beginning. The beginning of the season, new players. Let's evaluate what we have. Let's get to the middle of the season. That gives Kyle Dubas and the management group an opportunity to see what they have, to see what they need, where they can fortify their team. Just like the Tampa Bay Lightning did after they were swept four straight by the Columbus Blue Jackets. You know, they start out the year. They got into the middle of the year. Julien Brisebois trades for Goudreau, trades for Coleman, signs Bogosian. And now we're looking at the back-to-back Stanley Cup champions. And then when I say the beginning, the middle, and the beginning, it's all setting it up for the playoffs in May. But, Jeff, this is an important stretch for the Leafs. Banking points, Sheldon Keefe and the coaching staff get an opportunity to test different things, see how different players can handle different situations. So they're even better prepared come playoff time. But this is a team that's, you think about the goals were going to come. They were doing everything right except putting the puck in the net. Now they pop 15 on this California trip, and they don't give up anything.
Yeah, do you see that fancy graphic there, Craig? That's Joe from the Bridge. Whenever the Leafs are at the top, he fires that thing. He loves firing that thing up. Fire it up again, Joe from the Bridge.
Come on.
Put that board up there.
Oh, yeah.
And get the standings up.
Those stats are on fuzzy.
Look at this thing. Look at that.
That's beautiful.
Those stats are on fuzzy dice in his El Camino. They are hanging from his mirror.
He's memorized the whole thing. He knows exactly where the Leafs are compared to everyone else. It's Rain Man mathematician.
Well, the funny thing, too, about Joe from the Bridge is if the Leafs are up there in points, you'll have them at first there. If they're up there in points percentage, you'll have them first there.
Absolutely.
Like he knows all the combinations and permutations to put Toronto at the top.
He knows,
Craig,
and
what
that's
do you
why
do with this team?
He's running the ship, man.
We were talking earlier. What do you do with it, though? It's like, I think everybody's got to be on board. If you're living in the now and you support the team, you're like, but are you thinking, how do we improve it, playoffs? Or are you just like, let's just get to the new year and let's everything continue to develop?
Well, I mean, when you have a good team, and that's why I go back to Tampa Bay. So when we're looking at Tampa Bay coming off that that huge season, and then the incredible disappointment. I mean, they didn't just lose; they were swept aside four straight, right? And so they start out the next year. Jeff, you know, Jamie, you know this. As players, you want to come and like show that that's not what we're about, right? That's what you want to come back to, right? And at the end of the day, what you want to do is just figure out what you need. Did anybody see Blake Coleman and Barkley Goodrow and Zach Bogosian going to the Tampa Bay Lightning? But that's where you evaluate. I think that's where you evaluate with respect to what do you need. So, you know, for Kyle Dubas, you watch your team, you watch different situations and say, okay, that might be giving us a little bit of a problem. How can we solidify it? How can we strengthen that? But I think you do get to the new year. The bonus this year, and I mean, there's still a little bit of uncertainty about the NHL participating in the Olympics given the pandemic. But, you know, that's another opportunity to kind of take a deep breath. You know, if there's an Olympic break and then come back after that, see where your team is at heading into the trade deadline. I believe it's on March 21st, but it's a little bit longer evaluation that I think gives you a little better opportunity to really zero in on where you can strengthen the team.
With Craig Button joining us here on Overdrive. So this Brady Tkachuk, Brendan Lemieux. So I love that it's Lemieux that's in the middle of it. Of course it's Lemieux. They get into a tilt over the weekend, and the video is inconclusive. You can't see it based on the angle, but Brady reacts immediately when he first allegedly gets bit, and then he, I guess, allegedly got bit again. So Lemieux's on top of it. You can see it up there on TSN4. And Tkachuk went crazy after the game. We have the audio. Why don't we play this audio? Because I don't recall anyone, maybe since Keith Tkachuk, being this open and, you know, transparently disappointed and rattled and furious with the media well after the game had ended. This is what Brady Tkachuk had to say about Brendan Lemieux after the game over the weekend.
It's outrageous. It's like, kids don't even do that anymore. It's babies do that. And the fact that he decides it's, I don't even know what he's thinking. He's just a complete brickhead. He's got nothing up there. Bad guy, bad player, but what a joke he is.
Bad guy, bad player, what a joke he is.
Brickhead has got to be. That term's got to come back. I don't know if I've ever
good
heard
one.
It. But
that's the Tkachuk brothers to bring it back. Because he sounded like Keith there. When I'm listening, that sounds like Keith Tkachuk, which is understandable considering it's his son. And now I give credit to Jonathan Quick because he jumped out in front of it and said, no. He's our guy. Even if it's true, not true, who knows the dynamics of Brendan Lemieux in that room? Because Tkachuk went on to say he's not a liked player in the room, everywhere he's been. Like, it was, he went off on Lemieux. Now Matthew Tkachuk jumps on and corroborates the Brady Tkachuk report about Lemieux's character. This is a three-ring circus we've got. What do you make of this, Craig?
Well, the Tkachuks are Southies, and if nobody knows what a Southie is, that's South Boston area. Like, you know what? They're going to take on all comers. So when Brady gets bit, it may as well have been Matthew that got bit, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's just the way it works there. You know, listen, you know, I think for Brendan Lemieux, I mean, it's a reprehensible act. I mean, there's no other way to put it. And he bit him twice.
Right.
He didn't bite him once. He bit him twice. You know, okay, like, how do you rationalize once? There's no rationalization for once, let alone twice. You know, what Brady Tkachuk said about him, I think as Brendan Lemieux has to say, okay, you know, that's pretty harsh. That's pretty harsh. And, you know, teammates are going to have the players back and everything, but there is no way the players in Los Angeles are going, like, oh, yeah, that's okay. He's a good guy. They're going, he's a brickhead. They're saying the same things. Like, why would you bite somebody? They're not calling him a dummy or a dope, but they're thinking in their own heads, what? What?
Yeah, it just doesn't. It's one of those things, spitting on a guy, biting a guy. Like, there are certain written rules, unwritten rules, where it's just unacceptable. Wow. I mean,
I've always kind of liked the kid as a player. I wonder why he kind of bounces around. But they got to do something, and Ray always talks about it. You got to make everybody in the league understand that you are not doing that, and you're going to get a lengthy suspension. It's just they talk about wanting to get rid of non-hockey plays. Well, here's your opportunity to send a message and say, don't even ever think about doing this again, anyone in the league, because it's nonsense.
I agree with you, Jeff.
Yeah, I agree. I just – all I could think of is – like knowing Walt Keith, like Keith would want to beat the hell out of Claude. Like, you know, like this would I'm not
lying.
They fought
in the World Cup.
Well, this I love that it's Brendan Lemieux's Claude Lemieux's son. In case anyone didn't know that.
Like, that's all I'm thinking about.
In case you're not shocked by that, there's your info.
But that's my point. It's like all I could think about is like the dad would drive over to Claude Lemieux's house and kick his ass too. You know what I mean? Like that's kind of how, you know, that's that Southie mentality. But that's it wouldn't surprise me if Keith sees him at a rink. Like he'll go and confront him.
And clone my turtle at the time and then bury
him
from behind.
All I can think about is I guarantee you the next time either Calgary or Ottawa plays L.A., like that Lemieux kid better he better
he's
answer
tough
the bell.
Kid though
he is tough. I'm not saying that he's
I think
not.
He'll
seen
fight
him
back
in several good fights.
Yeah, I think he'll fight back.
He will, but that Brady I think will chew him apart and he'd be pissed. At, you know, he it was a gutless play.
Oh you yeah, know, biting. There's no defense for it. I mean, like it's especially when he was on top of Brady. Like I've heard the defense: if you're on top of me and I can't breathe, and I'm going to do something to survive. But that did. This wasn't a survival tactic by Brendan Lemieux.
No.
So he's going to likely pay a price. He's been offered an in-house, I guess, hearing, which allows the NHL to go 5+ games. Speaking of discipline, Brad Marchand suspended 3 games for a slew foot on Ekman Larson, and that's one I totally agree with as well.
Yeah.
It was a absolutely gutless slew foot. And it's, you know, I don't know where it lines up with biting and spitting and all that, but I know it's reprehensible and guys hate it. And the thing is, if Ekman Larson went off about Marchand, what would the response be? I would guess the Bruins would probably stick up for their guy. But slew foot, if that happens on Bergeron, people are freaking in Boston.
Well,
that was a bad play.
That's not Brad that's not Brad Marchand's first suspension for slew footing either.
Right.
Like and you know it's fascinating to me. You think about Brad. I mean, we're talking about a top player in the NHL, a real top player, and he had really there hasn't been incidents per se like this with Brad Marchand for a number of years. But then you know what ends up happening is that this occurs, and now people start to go, yeah, same old Brad Marchand,
right,
same
exactly.
old Brad Marchand, and you know now the narrative, and he is a top notch player, but he was away from this, and it's so dangerous because there's
really
no
is.
Way for a player to defend himself, and the risk of severe injury is significant, and that's what makes it like such a poor decision on Brad Marchand's part. And another, it is. It's a gutless play.
Yeah. Craig, do you think Evander Kane ever plays in the NHL again?
Yeah, I think he does, Jeff. I what I would say about Evander is that Evander, when you watch him play, I mean, he's a really good hockey player. And, you know, he's gone through some real significant off-ice issues and having to deal with them. And I think that if Evander Kane is ready to acknowledge and prepared to work through those issues and come out on the other side because of his skill, that he would play. If he doesn't, and I don't know that he doesn't have that desire, but if he doesn't, then I would agree with you. But based on his skill, he's a unique player. He's got a lot to offer to a team, and if he wants to get those issues sorted out and get him, I mean he's a single father of a child. You know, we know what's happened with different allegations from his ex-wife or estranged wife, whatever it is. But you know, to me, he adds a lot when he's playing the game.
Well, we'll see. He was on waivers cleared. He's going to go down to the minors with San Jose, and who knows where it ends up, you know, a month from now, 2 months, 2, 3, 4 years, who knows, with Evander Kane. But I don't think his story has been completed yet. Always great seeing you, Craig, even if we're at home here in studio through the 4K. Looking good, buddy. We'll
just
do it again soon.
Just waving at you guys. Hi. See ya.
We'll see you again soon. There's Craig Button, our TSN hockey analyst. Marcellus Wiley a little bit later in the hour. Maybe we'll slide in Al's brother. Get his thoughts and expertise on the Monday night or tonight.
Expertise.
1-for-2 yesterday. Right sure. there. Right there. 0-for-3 on Thursday, 1-for-2. That means you guys are trending in a winning direction. I like it. More
he had the
that.
Audacity to start the chirping after the one victory. And I'm like, this guy, I know what's coming around the corner.
You knew it was coming. He jumped on that 1 o'clock win, and then the 4 o'clock
the gift
o'clock
showed
lost.
Up. I swear I wanted to throw my phone in the toilet. I'm like, I know exactly what's happening after this.
There it is. Joe Cool, Joe Burrow, good for you. Big Bengals win, and then the Niners covered for me, and the Ravens covered for me. So we'll get into that more coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Al's brother, I have been informed, needs one more hour to put together his tremendous information and basically tabulate where he wants to go, what he wants to see tonight. And so you got to sit for an hour. If you want to know where the sharp money is, you can find that online. Where the public money is, you can find that online. If you want the sharp money, you got to wait an hour because Al's brother will supply that. Yes, the charcuterie. That's what he's currently having for dinner tonight. And then he will be supplying that information in about an hour. So sit tight for that, Chris Johnston. And about a half an hour back into the Leafs, back into Montreal. And, you know, the whole bilingual stuff, I don't think it's coincidence either. Like, it's political in nature as well. Francois Legault, the premier in Quebec, he came out last week and he wants to launch – some, you know, investigation into getting more French Canadians into the NHL and more.
Good
French
luck with
Canadians.
That, buddy. Good luck with that. What are you going to do? They either make it or they don't.
Exactly. Well, it's the goofiest political ploy.
It's asinine. Like,
it's asinine. Can you imagine Doug Ford saying we need more Ontario kids making the league?
You'd be like, it's ridiculous.
Doug, what are you
he
do
should
about
be ashamed
it?
Of himself for being so
yeah,
stupid.
Yeah, but they're, you
it's
know
so
what
the stupid.
Thing is they want to be heard. They want to turn it political. It's ridiculous. Like,
oh, it's all about the election.
Right, exactly. That I understand the language part, but the other part, nonsense, completely nonsense.
Furthermore, the NHL is an exclusively male sport. So what are you saying to all the girls growing up that female athletes in Quebec? Okay, right. Are you going to invest in us? You know, what about kids that play soccer, baseball, basketball? I get hockey and the cultural significance, the importance, the history of it all. I understand it, but what is Francois Legault possibly going to conjure up? It's going to lead to more French Canadians in the NHL, or force them into Montreal's hands. You know, like the best French Canadian going today, in my opinion, plays in Florida. So, you know, the Panthers were on the clock. Huberdeau was there. They took him.
Yeah, but what does this guy think is going to happen? The draft team ahead is going to be like, oh, darn, Montreal drafts behind us. We've got to leave him for them.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Patrice Bergeron, sorry, you're not allowed in Boston. You had to spend your whole career in Montreal because Francois Legault thinks that that's important and he wants to win the next election.
It's Franny ridiculous. Legault. Franny Legault.
Franny Legault. You know what? That's the one thing we talked about, you know, the Tkachuk situation. We didn't talk about Matt Murray. We also didn't talk about Vancouver. Like, we haven't hit all the things, and I know we've got plenty of time. We're going to get with the CJ, but it's just, you know, Travis Green's a dead man walking. Like,
Travis Green. Greeny, they got to – it is so dysfunctional in Vancouver. So clearly, the owner doesn't want to spend the money. They just gave him the new deal. Jim Benning's gone, too. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah.
And, you know, how Montreal beat them to the punch is actually astonishing, considering the Habs were in the Cup final like 4 or 5 months ago, and they clean house. And Vancouver is just, we'll see what happens. You know, plugging along here, it's a mess. We'll save time for that. We'll get into it. Chris Johnston, our TSN hockey insider, still to come. Al's brother still to come as well. Marcellus Wiley on the Monday nighter tonight. What's up with the Rams? What's up with Matt Stafford? What's up with Baker Mayfield and the Browns? As well, there's a lot coming out of the NFL. And is New England the best team in the league?
Mayfield.
Are they the best team in the league?
Kidding me, Baker Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield.
That guy threw 4 picks yesterday, and you can't win that game.
That is so embarrassing. The Ravens,
dude.
4 picks and 16 points, and Baker Mayfield can't win that football game.
Baltimore had Al's brother at QB, and they couldn't beat him yesterday.
Yeah, that's right, because they had Al's brother's brother behind center in Cleveland, which is an even worse athlete and even worse quarterback play. It was pathetic by the Browns last night. So that more coming up. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 4. All right, Monday nighter tonight, Seattle, Washington. The Seahawks are a 2-point favorite tonight. That line keeps moving. I believe Washington, I think it was a pick 'em over the weekend, and keeps moving in the direction of Seattle. And the game is in Washington tonight. Neither team is great team, clearly. Seahawks are 3-7. Washington's 4-6. But Russell Wilson's back, healthy, and I'm sure that's a big part of where that's going. But it was a pretty wild weekend in the world of the NFL. We are deep into the season now. And to chat about it, we're joined now by longtime NFL. You can see him, hear him up on FS1. Here is Marcellus Wiley. How you doing, Marcellus?
Doing great, guys. What's up?
Well, we're trying to figure out what's up in your hometown, man. The Chargers, they lose yesterday. They're Jekyll and Hyde, and the Rams, man, they look bad right now. Matt Stafford looks terrible. He could have been picked off four or five times yesterday.
The Packers, hell is up with that guy?
Well, let's ask Marcellus. I mean, we'll put you on the floor here, man. You speak up and represent the Rams. What's going on with Stafford and what's going on in L.A.?
Yeah, I mean, the Rams are certainly reeling right now, as you can watch this team. Team that early season, everyone was priming for a Super Bowl contention. Now you just wonder, will they even continue at this pace, and will they even survive to make the playoffs? They're in still a great position with a 7-4 record, but you just blink. A few weeks ago, they were 7-1, and now they've lost three straight, and you can't really understand and believe your lying eyes, but it's telling you the truth. This team has gotten away from its core identity in large part because of its fascination with Matthew Stafford in that passing game. Early in the season, you can look at their rushing performances, and you will see this team with rushing performances all 100-plus in wins, one, two, three, four, five different games as late as the last game that they won against the Houston Texans, 165 rushing yards. Then you see their three losses, and then you realize they never eclipsed 100 yards. So their core principles is to run the football that sets up the play action, which sets up the big explosive plays. Now, when you have Jared Goff, that's kind of more of necessity than luxury. When you get Matthew Stafford and he wows you in practice, he wows you in his early performances, you get away from that and you just say, hey, let's skip the other steps and let's get to the explosive plays. And that there is the problem. You're going to have fewer explosive plays because you didn't set it up. And this is one thing I learned from the NFL. No matter how great you are and what's your great go-to move, and, hey, nobody could beat me at doing this when I was in high school and college. In the pros, they always make you go plan B. So if you want to go out there and use your best move first, they're just going to say, oh, you just gave us a recipe for success. You got to set us up. And that includes the fast guys have to be able to show that they'll run you over before they just run to the sidelines. That includes the teams that know they have great receiving cores, that they have to run the football to set up those big plays. It all has to work hand in hand. And right now, they're working with only one hand, and it's starting to get exposed. It's Matthew Stafford having issues in the passing game.
Yeah, they're looking behind them too, man. Like, they know Arizona's in front, but the Niners are coming alive. Niners are coming alive, and Niners look like a team that's healthy, and they trust the run game. They trust the coach again in Shanahan, and the Niners are lurking. They were one of the three teams that beat the Rams over the last 3 weeks. And on the flip side, the Packers get a much-needed win, and now they go into a bye week, and now they can settle in a little bit. They've had some big injuries, but if you get guys back like Smith, like Alexander, Bakhtiari's going to be back at left tackle at some point. Do you think the Packers could be standing atop the NFC in a month, month and a half?
Yeah, they could. And I don't know if that's great or encouraging or what is that. It certainly beats the alternative of being at the bottom or being out the playoffs. But let's remember that the narrative before last year was the Packers. They could never get that home game at Lambeau and when it mattered in the playoffs, the NFC Championship game. And then they finally get one in Lambeau. It's been a while, right? And what's their record in NFC Championship games? 1-4. So this prime pole position that they are putting themselves in position for may not be the best thing for them. I still don't trust them over the Tampa Bay Buccaneers in terms of flinching, in terms of those moments of truth. When it comes down to it, crunch times, I trust Tom Brady more than I do Aaron Rodgers, despite Aaron Rodgers being great as he is. So it's a situation where if they set themselves up for that success, what does it truly mean when Aaron Rodgers in NFC Championship games, and we have a five-game sample size now, has what, 9 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, a low quarterback rating, and we see the win-loss record is not the same as Aaron Rodgers, the great, in the regular season. So I just think that it's not going to be discouraging to any other team to go to Lambeau, just like Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Bucks did last year, and have to get that victory. They won one Super Bowl, and they won that one Super Bowl being a wild card team. The next year, they were 15-1. I mean, this team was amazing, and they lose the home playoff game to the New York Giants. So you just got to remember that this team, somehow, some way, when it matters most, historically hasn't always showed up. We'll see how it goes going forward.
Last year, Marcellus, I asked you about Baker Mayfield, and it was a garbage comparison because it was either Jared Goff or Baker Mayfield. I think you took Baker Mayfield. After watching yesterday, Baker Mayfield, like, where are you at with him? And the follow-up is, what the hell do organizations do if they're looking at the quarterback is so important and they know that the guy that they have, they're just not going to go anywhere with that guy under center?
Yeah, I take your word for it, but it's been very few, if any, times I've ever chosen Baker Mayfield over anything. Boy, is he bad, and he's been bad for a minute here. But, you know, it's interesting, man. He's just a roller coaster ride. So the only thing he's consistent in is being inconsistent, and that's the problem. You can't sleep peacefully at night. You cannot, because Baker Mayfield, he's so much risk but very little reward. His record in the fourth quarter of game-winning or tying drives is 2-13. Like, when you have money on the line and it's time to go out there and show, hey, we've been battling for four quarters, basically, it's your turn to take it. Just like last night, you see Baker Mayfield fall short of those moments. So I'm looking at it like Baker Mayfield has played himself out of a conversation for me as a franchise quarterback. I think the Cleveland Browns, even though they have leverage in this conversation, they feel stuck because Baker Mayfield ignited this franchise. He started something. But since you start something, doesn't mean you can finish it. And I don't think Baker Mayfield can finish what he started in Cleveland. If you watch Kevin Stefanski postgame, he had both arms on the podium, locked out, shaking his head negatively the entire time. Frustrated with his offense, really frustrated with his quarterback, because six of his last seven starts, 14 points or fewer. That's not going to cut it in the NFL, certainly as a franchise quarterback.
No, that's a mess last night, man. Lamar throws four picks, put 16 points on the board, and you can't win that game. Like, they had to have that game. The defense showed up. They had to have that game, and they blew it, and now I think their season is effectively done. What about the New England Patriots? We bring them up weekly. At what point do we start talking about them as the best team in the NFL, as opposed to, are they the best team in the AFC East? That was 2 weeks ago. Then last week it was, are they the best team in the AFC? Is it appropriate to ask if they're the best team in the NFL today?
It's appropriate. I think it gets shot down quickly for good reason or maybe not good reason, but it's a rookie quarterback leading the charge. So you just will have to think to yourself, okay, if this plays out, they're the best team in their division, so they win the division. They're the best team in the AFC, so they're in the Super Bowl. But then they face Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, whoever else the NFC could send, whether it could be the Arizona Cardinals, you could see Kyler Murray out there, whatever that team may look like from the NFC, would you bet on a rookie in the Super Bowl? Now, so far, he's been defying odds as a rookie for the New England Patriots, taking Cam Newton's job, and then leading his team to a place where right now they look like the best team in the AFC, at least the most consistent team in the AFC, certainly. So now can he defy odds one more time if we want to run the entire way with our imagination? Can he win it all? Can a rookie quarterback, a true, pure rookie quarterback go out there and win it all? Even Tom Brady sat his first year as a quarterback and then was allowed his second year to win it all. So same system, same coach, but different in terms of the calendar and scheduling. But so far, everything we've bet on in terms of Mac Jones and his limitations in the Patriots, they've defied them. And with that defense that they have, I certainly believe they can put themselves in the Super Bowl and potentially win it in a game where it's parity all at the top.
Yeah, it's been a pretty incredible run, and they got Buffalo at Buffalo Monday night, a week tonight, man. That's the game of the season probably up to this point or real close to it, certainly in the AFC. So that'll be a big one for both teams. Great stuff, buddy. Enjoy the game tonight. We'll do it again this time next week.
Let's do it, brothers. Take care, guys.
There's Marcellus Wiley, longtime NFLer, host up on FS1, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Build your next dream Toyota at Maple Toyota. Pre-orders are now available for all models, including the all-new 2022 Tundra and Corolla Cross. Visit MapleToyota.com. Yeah, this time next week, man, we'll be doing a lot of chatter about Bills Pats down in Buffalo. You can bank on that. That'll be a big game. And I guess if I'm on the Monday Nighter tonight, that means Team Al Dog will have to pick that game. Team Al Dog will be on the clock. And
it's not even a team. Like, I'd stop saying it. Like, it's garbage.
What are you, District 5 from the Mighty Ducks? You're just a bunch of people that came together randomly?
I don't know, but it's not a team anymore. We're the worst of the worst. Whatever you want to, like, we're Detroit. We're the Lions. We're the Canucks, the Habs. Like, we're not team anything. Stop saying it.
Okay. Well, you've got hats. You guys are a team.
That's right.
You have legit hats. Like, you have – I saw it on
Noodles.
Twitter.
I'll start cleaning out the litter boxes at my house with those hats before I ever wear it in public again.
We need you with
wear,
one of those
don't
on
you
again.
Say that. You wear one, and you wear it proudly. You go down with the ship. When Al
That's
drives
right.
you right off a cliff, you stay in there. Because I
imagine
you
listening to a guy
that.
Every week saying, like, just a full stat pack of what's going to happen, and every time it doesn't happen.
And just confident as hell, dude.
That's all that matters.
That's the best part.
That's all
that matters.
Sounds great. And the confidence is there, exactly. If you believe it, then, you know, it's only a lie if you actually
Only in your head.
It.
Like, that's the thing.
Stop
if you,
it.
You say it,
so
you believe it. If you say it enough and say it loud enough, people will believe you. That's what
he's
saying.
That's all that matters. People, no one knows who actually picked what. They just know Al's brother's very informed. So he's coming up in the next hour. Chris Johnston,
great,
our TSN hockey analyst, coming up in the next hour as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.